use the sand. It's a four-part process. First, I open my stance. I align everything, my feet, hips, and shoulders, to the left of the target. That pre-programs an out-to-in swing, the club head cutting across the sand and the ball through impact. Second, I open the club face. I aim the club face to right of the target. That does two things. It increases the loft of the club face so I can hit the ball high and soft, and it also increases the amount of bounce on the sole of the club head. Third, I weaken my grip. The last thing I want on a sand shot is for the club face to rotate to a closed position through impact. To discourage that rotation, I weaken my left hand grip at address so the back of my left hand faces the target. Fourth, I position the ball forward. I like it just opposite my left heel. Play the ball forward promotes a higher trajectory and also encourages me to slide the club head easily through the sand. If you remember these four things, you'll get out of the sand without a problem. But easy does it. The standard bunker shot is about technique, not about strength. I don't need to apply any more effort than I would on a 40-yard shot from the fairway. Here are some of the techniques I use to control the shot. I downsize my swing. I don't need a long swing with lots of body action, as there is no need for extra distance. I keep my grip pressure light, maintain an easy rhythm, and swing my hands back to about shoulder height. I cock my wrists fully. The club head speed I generate comes mainly from my hands and arms. I break my wrists early on the backswing and cock them all the way. This is a very handsy shot, with very little movement in my hips and legs. I'm a right-hand man. The swing on the greenside bunker shot is dominated by the right hand. Through impact, the action is very similar to throwing a ball. I go ahead and release. Even though I've really slung the club through the sand with my right hand, I make sure that the toe of the club head hasn't turned over fully after impact. That's due to my weak left-hand grip. I know the ball will come out high and soft. Finally, I slide rather than chop. During the shot, the sand should be thrown forward at a fairly low angle. That's because I don't hit down too steeply on the ball. I simply try to swing through impact into the follow-through, allowing the ball to come out on a small cushion of sand. When I'm done, I won't leave a very deep divot. How much sand do you take? The amount of sand I take depends on how much spin I want to put on the ball. When I want the ball to run after it hits the green, I aim for a spot about 3 inches behind the ball. The ball then comes out of the thick cushion of sand with hardly any backspin. When I want to hit the ball high and make it stop quickly, I'll hit maybe an inch behind the ball, sometimes less. I very rarely try to pick the ball cleanly without taking any sand at all, as the ball can very easily get away from me and fly too far. If there is one mistake common among poor bunker players, it's decelerating through impact. It probably stems from hitting at the ball instead of through it. To be consistent from sand, the club head must be gaining speed when it enters the sand instead of slowing down. This is true even on short bunker shots. Try to imagine that the club is traveling its fastest at a point 6 inches beyond the ball. A primer on the buried lie. A ball buried in the sand can work on your mind. Remember that shot I pulled off from a buried lie in the Grand Slam of golf in Hawaii? When I first saw the ball was buried, I didn't exactly look forward to playing it. I won't lie, I was discouraged. Not only did I have an awkward stance, but the fact that the ball was buried meant I would have limited control over how the ball behaved when I hit it. I realized I would need a lot of luck just to get up and down, and that a birdie was almost out of the question. It was all I could do to pull myself together and apply everything I had into playing that shot. At first blush, buried lies bomb us all out. Truth is, buried lies aren't all that difficult to play, if you don't count that shot I pulled off in Hawaii. Sure, you won't hit the ball as close to the hole consistently as you would from a perfect lie, but you can still hit the ball close enough to have a reasonable chance of an up and down. Hit the spot. To get the ball out of a plugged lie, I have to find a way to make the club penetrate the sand as deeply as possible. I want to take a divot that is deep enough to bury a small animal in. I like to aim for a spot about 2 inches behind the ball. That's where the divot starts. Open up and lean to the left. If I'm going to need a very vertical swing with the club entering the sand on as steep an angle as possible, I adjust my setup accordingly. 1. I address the ball with an open stance to encourage a steep out-to-in swing path. 2. I lean to my left so my spine is more vertical as opposed to being slanted to my right. 3. I open the club face and position my hands ahead of the ball. Forget finesse. This is no time to make a soft, cozy swing. I put a lot of effort into the shot, applying extra force with my right hand. Remember, I swing down as opposed to through the shot. I'll have almost no follow-through because the sand will stop the club head less than a foot after impact. The ball will come out with almost no spin, so allow for extra run. The hardest shot in golf. No doubt about it, the toughest shot to play well consistently is the long explosion. By long, I mean a shot of about 30 yards. Too long to play with your greenside bunker technique, too short to play like you would a full shot from a fairway bunker. There is an effective way to play it, but even after I show you how, you're going to need lots of practice. You should experiment with different clubs, too. For a 30-yard shot, I'll use anything from a sand wedge to an 8-iron depending on the lie. I modify my setup. Because this shot requires as much body action as a full swing shot from the fairway, I set up with my feet and shoulders open very slightly to the target line. I don't want to be so open that I can't turn freely, but you should be open enough to make the clubhead approach the ball on a head-on path instead of from inside the target line. Club face is square, ball slightly forward. Opening the club face increases loft, and I don't want to hit the ball so high that it can't travel far enough forward to reach the green, so I set the club face to the target line. I also will want to take just a little sand on this shot, so I aim about an inch behind the ball. Precision is everything. Take more sand than that, and I'll come up short. Hit the ball thin, and I'll airmail the green. Swing with controlled fury. I'll need as much clubhead speed as I can muster, so I'll want to make as big a backswing as I comfortably can. But remember what I said about precision. Make sure you keep your head still and maintain a smooth tempo. I swing through the ball with lots of acceleration, arriving at a full, complete finish. Dialing in your distance. Making the transition from a short sand shot to a longer one is pretty tricky. A lot of players regulate their distance by opening or closing the club face, or else varying how much sand they take. I prefer to regulate how far the ball flies by adjusting the length of my follow-through. The longer the shot, the harder I try to achieve a full, complete finish. This little trick is very effective, because in order to lengthen my follow-through, I have to accelerate pretty fiercely through impact. On the other hand, a short follow-through means I haven't swung all out through impact and the ball won't travel as far. For quick height, maintain loft. One of the things I love about playing in the British Open is the unique course design features you see in Scotland and England. The most dramatic may be the steep, sod-faced bunkers that are easy to get into and brutal trying to escape from. I try to avoid these monstrosities at almost any cost, because you sometimes are forced to play sideways to get out of one, and I don't like throwing away strokes. I'm getting good at avoiding them, too. When I won the 2000 British Open at St. Andrews, I didn't land in one all week. Some explosive thoughts. I believe the principles of good sand play are pretty much the same for everyone. If you want to hit the ball higher, there's no arguing that you must either open the club face or position the ball farther forward in your stance to increase your launch angle. I mean, there's no other sound way to obtain more height on the shot. There are other principles that have more to do with strategy and club selection than with physics and swing mechanics. Every amateur, high handicappers especially, should obey the following five rules at all times. First, from fairway bunkers, forget about using any club longer than a 4-iron unless the sand is moist and packed, with the ball perched in a perfect lie. Second, take at least one club more than you would from grass at the same distance. Third, the longer the shot, the lighter you should hold the club. That increases your ability to generate speed, and speed is necessary on every shot from sand. Fourth, if your lie is even a little dicey, position the ball at least an inch further back in your stance than you would from a perfect lie. If the lie is bad, play it back even farther. Finally, from greenside bunkers, aim for the top of the flagstick. Most misses from sand come up short rather than long, so give yourself the benefit of the doubt. How to play from fairway bunkers. Some people say the best shot they've ever seen me hit was a 6-iron from the fairway bunker on the 72nd hole of the 2000 Canadian Open. I don't know about it being my best shot ever, but it definitely was one of the best I hit all year. And it had to rank right up there among my most memorable sand shots. Explaining how I played it really is four lessons in one. It includes strategy, trusting your swing, proper club selection, and reading the elements. At the time, I was holding on to a one-stroke lead over Grant Waite, who I just couldn't shake all day. Even though I was playing very well, my drive on the last hole had drifted into the fairway bunker, and I had exactly 218 yards to the pin. Grant's shot had found the fairway, but he was away and would hit first. The outcome of this shot would determine whether I played safely or aggressively. When he knocked his ball on the green 20 feet from the hole, it really forced my hand. Instead of taking a shorter club and aiming for the middle of the green, I had to take one more club and try to hit it close. There are easier shots in golf. In addition to the distance, 218 yards is a long way to hit a 6-iron even from a perfect lie in the fairway. It was raining, and the wind was blowing from the left directly toward the water that was set hard by the right side of the green. I decided on the 6-iron and aimed for the middle of the green, hoping the wind would blow the ball a little to the right. As for how I played the shot, I had been working on a new fairway bunker technique I had discovered back home in Orlando. It consisted of flattening my swing plane a little bit in order to shallow out my angle of approach into the ball and provide a little more margin for error. I also had weakened my left-hand grip to make sure the club face wouldn't turn over through impact. It had worked well in practice, but practice and competition are two different things. I decided to give that new technique a try. If not now, when? Eventually, you have to put techniques to the fire to see if they hold up. And I had a lot going for me. I had a great lie, my confidence was high, and I was feeling strong. I set up slightly open to promote a tiny fade. Then I just ripped it. I knew it would be pretty good the moment it left the club face. And sure enough, the wind carried the ball a little to the right, just past hole high. I two-putted from there and took home the trophy. The most satisfying thing about that shot, the fun thing really, was pulling that shot off under pressure. Play the ball back for crisp contact. Hitting the ball solidly, without touching a grain of sand if possible, is the only way to get a lot of distance on this shot. I play the ball further back on my stance than I would on a shot of similar length from the fairway. Next, I take at least one more club than for a normal shot. When I grip the club, I choke down on the handle for extra control of the club head. Finally, I make sure I have solid footing. I'm about to make a big swing, and I can't afford to slip. And remember, stand tall and lift your chin. Just before I start the backswing, I raise my chin well away from my chest. That raises my center of gravity and helps me stand tall throughout the swing, which in turn promotes a solid hit. When I swing, I only apply about 70% of my total effort. The extra club I've chosen will provide the distance I need. I swing smoothly into a high finish, keeping my head down until well after the ball is gone. Well, that wraps up the short game section of this program. Next, I'll be discussing techniques for the full swing. My swing is a work in progress and always will be, but it all started with sound basics. Just a reminder, please feel free to stop the tape and practice these techniques, or refer to the photos in the booklet we've included with this audio. The full swing. After I won the 1997 Masters by 16 strokes with a record score of 16 under par, I wasted no time celebrating. One thing I know how to do is have fun, and I didn't leave anything in the bag. I partied with my buddies, traveled a little, and generally had a great time. I knew I would have to come back to Earth eventually, but I wasn't in any special hurry to get there. One night, a week or so later, after the elation had started to die down, I decided to sit down and watch a tape of the entire tournament. I was by myself, so I was really able to concentrate on critiquing my full swing to see if there was some flaw I might be able to work on. I didn't see one flaw. I saw about 10. I had struck the ball great that week, but by my standard, I felt I'd gotten away with murder. My club shaft was across the line at the top of the backswing, and my club face was closed. My swing plane was too upright. I liked my ball flight, but I was hitting the ball further with my irons than I should have been because I was de-lofting the club face through impact. I didn't like the look of those things, and the more I thought about it, the more I realized I didn't like how my swing felt either. From a ball-striking standpoint, what got me through the week was exceptionally good timing, the fact I didn't three-putt once, a solid game plan, and good concentration. In short, I was playing better than I knew how. Even before the tape ended, I committed myself to making some big changes in my swing. Butch had pointed out some of these swing flaws before, and we had been working on them slowly. But I decided right then and there to pick up the pace. I got on the phone and called Butch and let him know what I was thinking. He was all for the swing overhaul I had in mind. The overhaul took more than a year before the changes really started to kick in. First, my full swing started to look better. Then, the ball started to behave better. Finally, my swing started to feel right, and that's when I knew I had it. I had a very good year in 1999, and in 2000, I played by far the best golf of my life. The point of this story is that the golf swing will always be a work in progress, regardless of how good you are. The goal is to have a swing that is mechanically sound, repeatable, works with every club in your set, and holds up under pressure. I don't know if anyone will ever achieve a state of perfection. I know I haven't. But you can bet I'll keep trying. In this section, I'll outline the basics of the full swing, explain them in some detail, and give advice on how you can implement them into your swing. Just a quick reference. Take a look at the photo of my swing under this same title. I'm convinced that the ingredients of a sound full swing, the positions you want to establish, and the way you make them flow together will never change. By the time we're finished, you'll have a swing that will serve you well the rest of your life. One grip for all shots. The grip is the cornerstone of the swing. It is related to almost every element of the swing itself, including path, club face position, ball position, and posture. My own grip has evolved over the years. When I was a junior golfer, I preferred a strong left-hand grip. My hand rotated well to my right on the handle of the club. That made both hands much more active during the swing, made it easier to square the club face at impact, and gave me extra distance. Later, after I grew and became stronger, I weakened my left hand considerably. Today, it's in a fairly neutral position, with 2.5 knuckles of my left hand showing at address. That's the best position of all, in my opinion, and one I know will suit most every golfer. Whenever I made a grip change, I made sure I had a club in my hands constantly so I could practice my new grip. I wanted my new grip to start feeling natural as quickly as possible. To perfect your grip, let me review some of the basics that I use. My left hand is my control hand. To position the club, I make sure the handle runs diagonally across the base of my fingers, from the base of the forefinger to a point atop the callus pad below my little finger. That provides the best combination of sensitivity and control. At all cost, I avoid placing the handle too far toward the palm of my open left hand. If I don't, I'll lose club head speed and the sensitivity. When the left hand grip is complete and I lower the club into the address position, the thumb should be positioned to the right of center on the handle, and the V formed by the right thumb and forefinger should point just outside my right ear. Next, remember that the right hand is designed for speed. The right hand grip is similar to that of the left hand. The main difference is that the club is placed more along the fingers. The handle should run from the middle portion of your right index finger to the base of your pinky. This activates your right hand so it can supply speed on the downswing. Why I interlock. As a little boy, I was taught the interlocking grip, the little finger of my right hand laced between the forefinger and middle finger of my left hand. That's how Jack Nicklaus, my idol, did it, and I copied him. It gives me the feeling that my hands can't separate during the swing. I'm in the minority, though. Most players prefer the overlapping grip, with the little finger of the right hand placed riding in the notched form by the left forefinger and middle finger. My feeling is, either way is fine. The finished product. My complete grip provides a sense of snugness and unity between the two hands. They should feel as if they are melded together, almost as if you were born to hold a club. If you don't have this sensation, practice gripping and re-gripping the club. Keep a club handy just for this purpose. You should hold the club lightly enough to allow plenty of wrist freedom and to have some feel, but firmly enough to maintain control of the club throughout the swing. The most important thing is to keep your grip pressure steady. If you increase your grip pressure at any point during the swing, it will cost you club head speed and control of the club. On the subject of grip pressure, I believe a lot of amateurs hold the club too tightly because their hands aren't on the club correctly to begin with. To prevent the club from sliding around the fingers and palm, they instinctively tighten their hold, usually at the beginning of the downswing. It proves once again why a technically perfect grip is so important. If your grip is sound, you don't have to think about your hands at all during the swing. You're free to concentrate on the other aspects of good ball striking. Stance is for balance and power. The full swing involves a lot of motion in your upper body. You need a solid foundation to support the motion without stifling it, and that's where stance width comes in. A narrow stance, say placing your feet about shoulder width apart, is fine for short and middle irons, but for driver and fairway woods, however, it's too narrow. There's no way to maintain your balance and stability with your feet close together. To do it, you would have to swing at half speed. On the other hand, if your feet are too wide, you do gain stability, but the wider your stance, the more you restrict the turning of your hips and shoulders on the back and forward swings. To achieve the proper stance width for a driver shot, I line up the insides of my feet with the outside point of my shoulders. From here, I can swing all out with plenty of support from my feet and legs, while at the same time maintaining my ability to turn my hips and shoulders fully. As a reference, take a moment to look at the photo under the heading Proper Stance Width. The right stance width allows me to shift my weight onto the right side while maintaining the flex in my right knee. I'm balanced, fully loaded, and ready to go after it on the downswing. Posture. Golf is like any other sport that requires movement. You need to be in an athletically ready position so you can respond to movement quickly, smoothly, and without losing your balance. The key to good posture is matching up your torso and lower body so one can react to the other throughout the swing. Try to avoid too much knee flex. An extreme amount of knee bending limits your ability to turn your shoulders fully on the backswing and downswing. The shorter swing arc costs you clubhead speed and accuracy. Another problem is that you flatten the lie of the club. The club face tends to point to the left, and that, combined with an inability to turn, leads to a pull or slice. On the other hand, try to avoid too little knee flex. If I lock my knees at a dress, I'm forced to bend excessively at the waist just to reach the ball, a recipe for poor balance throughout the swing. I'll also utilize only 70% of my potential power, because my lower body can't contribute to the swing at all. I'm forced to perform the entire motion with my upper body alone, and I can't hit the ball out of my shadow swinging like that. For the right amount of knee flex, you want just enough bend to feel balanced and ready for action. For me, it's when I have a sense of being light on my feet. My weight is distributed evenly from my heel to toe, and my hips and shoulders are ready to rotate freely with full cooperation from my legs and feet. Good golf is played from the ground up, meaning that my feet, legs, and hips initiate the downswing. If my knees are flexed properly, I can activate the lower body well before my shoulders, arms, and hands get involved. The correct sequence of motion is critical. Distance from the ball should be precise. This is closely related to posture and knee flex, so let's talk about it here. Standing the correct distance from the ball at a dress is vital if you are to make a sound swing. If you're too close or too far away, you're forced to make all sorts of anatomical adjustments in order to compensate, and you won't compensate very well. If you're standing too close, it forces your knees into the locked position we talked about. What's more, your spine will be too upright. Additionally, your arms won't have room to swing freely, you also won't be able to turn your shoulders on the correct plane, and you're destined to swing the club way too upright going back and coming down. The ball can go anywhere from this position, and you can bet it won't go very far. If you're too far away, you'll have to extend your arms out from your body, and you'll lose flexibility in your knees. The tendency is to lift the spine on the backswing and then pitch forward on the downswing. The ball is bound to go anywhere but straight. Now, if you're measured off just right, the signs that you're standing the correct distance from the ball are clear. When I get into position, my arms are hanging comfortably, just a shade outside of vertical. My knees are flexed ever so slightly. I'm bent over at the tips comfortably, but not too far, and my weight is evenly distributed between my heels and toes. Now I can turn back and through the ball without changing my spine angle or my knee flex. When I swing, my arms, hands, and club have a great chance of returning to the position I've established at address. Ball position can make or break you. Poor ball position is a silent killer. If you don't place the ball precisely in relation to your stance, the ball will be playing you instead of you playing the ball. You'll have to conjure up some type of weird swing movement just to get the club on the ball. And because of that, you'll never be consistent. On the other hand, if your ball position is correct for the type of club you're hitting, you'll be encouraged to make all the right moves during the swing. Take a look at the photo of my stance in relation to the ball position. Remember, hands stay same distance from body. Regardless of the club I'm using, My hands remained the same distance from my thighs. That's a great reference point. Although the length of the driver demands the ball be placed further away from you than for any other club, I make no wild attempt to reach for the ball. Note that my driver is soled squarely to the ground. The same will be true for the other clubs because they become increasingly upright as they grow shorter. Try to avoid common mistakes. Poorer players are prone to the same errors in ball position. They tend to play the ball too far back in the stance with their longer clubs, perhaps because they feel they can't reach the ball through impact if it's too far forward. The result is that they can't turn behind the ball fully on the backswing. With the driver, they are prone to pop-ups, pulls, and slices. With the shorter clubs, the most common mistake is positioning the ball too far forward. Beginning the backswing. Now the real fun is about to begin. Let's start the full swing by setting the club into motion correctly. Notice I said the club, not your body. The reason you've worked hard at positioning your body the right way is so it can transport the club on the proper path and plane throughout the swing. Here's what I recommend. Start the club online. Midway through the backswing, the club should be parallel with your stance line. You get it there by swinging the club back with your shoulders, arms, and hands working together smoothly. From here, it's easy to swing the club into perfect position at the top of the backswing. Don't let the club stray inside. I've made this mistake many times, and it's a killer. If the club moves too far to the inside midway through the backswing, the shaft aiming to the right of my target, I'm forced to make compensations. I call them makeup moves, to get the club back on the right track. If I return the club to this position on the downswing, I'll probably push the ball to the right. Six keys to a great backswing. Now, here are six checkpoints to ensure you've arrived at a great position at the top of the swing. Take a look at the photo featuring my backswing as a reference. First, I let my right elbow come away from my side, but I make sure it points toward the ground. Second, I keep my right knee flexed, the same way I had it at address. Third, my weight is gathered under my right heel. Fourth, my left shoulder should be turned under my chin. That's easier to do if I keep my chin held high throughout the swing. Fifth, my club face should be square at the top, meaning it's parallel to my left forearm. And finally, my left heel stays flat on the ground, which helps restrict my hip turn, creating more torque. The magic triangle. The longer and wider you make your backswing, the more time you give yourself to accumulate speed and power on the downswing. A big shoulder turn is responsible for part of that, but your arms play a big role too. One of my key thoughts is, wide at the top, I push my left arm away from my head as far as I can, and my right arm goes right along with it. My two arms and elbows form a triangle that helps keep the club face square and the club online. Avoid the dreaded flying elbow. As you stretch your left arm away from your body, make darn sure your right elbow doesn't drift recklessly from your side so it winds up pointing to the sky. The flying right elbow means your backswing is loose and disjointed, your arms totally out of sync with what your body is doing. Your downswing will lack power and consistency. And don't be too connected either. The other way to ruin your triangle is to pinch your right elbow against your side. It shortens your swing, adds tension, and makes it difficult to coordinate your arms and body on the downswing. Practice makes permanent. Most golfers encounter streaks where their swing falls into place and they play very well for a short period of time. On the other hand, they fall into slumps where the swing doesn't feel right and the ball goes everywhere except where they're aiming. My goal, and it may be unattainable, is to groove my swing to the extent that I play my best golf all the time. There is only one way that's going to happen. Practice and more practice. Long ago, I committed myself to the idea that there are no shortcuts to improvement. The best way to ingrain the correct movements and positions is through repetition. Some players look at practice as drudgery. I happen to love it. Give me a big pile of balls, a new glove, my clubs, and some nice turf, and I'm one happy human. Other golfers may outplay me from time to time, but they'll never outwork me. In search of the slot. I talked about positioning the club correctly midway through the backswing. The reason I stress that so much is because you have a much better chance of setting it in the elusive position known as the slot, at the top of the swing. If you like, stop the tape and check your reflection in the mirror or a window to see where your club is, then work on setting it correctly. Here are two common mistakes. First, the club is laid off. If the club points to the left of the target at the top, you are prone to coming over the top on the downswing. You'll cut across the ball from out to in and hit a slice or pull. Second, the club is across the line. If the club points to the right of the target at the top, you are across the line and will likely swing the club down too much from the inside. That means a block to the right or a big hook. For the ideal top of backswing position, the shaft is parallel to the target line, just as it was midway through the backswing. If I start the downswing by shifting my lower body to the left and unturning my hips, the club will drop down and approach the ball on the perfect path and plane. Be sure to take a look at the photo under the heading In Search of the Slot. Let gravity rule. The faster you swing the club through impact, the farther the ball goes. That's a simple equation, but obtaining speed and power on the downswing is easier said than done. A problem almost every golfer encounters is rushing the downswing, letting loose with everything they have the moment the backswing is complete. When you do that, however, nothing works in proper sequence. The shoulders outrace the arms outrace the hands, and the hands outrace the club. All that speed is expended too soon, and the club head is actually losing speed as it strikes the ball, when it should be accelerating. I like to start the downswing by shifting my weight easily back to my left side, and then letting my arms fall downward in the front of my chest. I don't want my shoulders unwinding so fast that they get way ahead of my arms. I'm giving my arms a little head start. They work in concert with my shoulders to create a real package of power coming into the ball. That good timing allows me to hit the ball a mile, and I don't have to try very hard to do it. Trial and error. I feel very lucky to play golf in an era where so many technological resources are available to optimize my performance, speed my improvement, and widen my understanding of the golf swing. There are many ways to get an edge, and technology is one of them. I'm very open-minded toward any innovation that can potentially make me a better player. I have a lot of tools at my disposal, and I use them all. High-speed video cameras have made it possible to view my swing from several different angles at once and spot even the tiniest flaw. There is no guesswork involved in my swing now. When I hit a bad shot, my understanding of cause and effect enables me to pinpoint the reason immediately. My clubs are manufactured exactly to my specifications. The lofts, lies, shaft flexes, and overall weights optimize with painstaking precision. I play a ball that feels and spins just right. My workout regimen is one designed specifically for golf, with emphasis on strength, flexibility, and endurance. I've learned a great deal about nutrition and human physiology in general. My understanding of sports psychology has made me a better golfer emotionally and intellectually. All this to improve the way I whack a ball with a stick. What really excites me is the prospect of even greater breakthroughs in all these areas. We can't help but be better golfers for it. How to flag your irons. All things considered, it's easier to play golf during the day than at night. I learned that as a kid when my dad and I used to sneak out on the military golf course near our home and play a few holes just as darkness was gathering. And I learned it all over again at Firestone Country Club in the final round of the 2000 NEC Invitational. I had the lead coming up the 18th hole. And it was so dark, people up by the green were holding up cigarette lighters, as if it were a rock concert. There had been a 3-hour rain delay earlier in the day, and now it was so black I could barely make out the flag stick on the green. My ball, from what I could see of it, was sitting up pretty well in the first cut of rough. I had 168 yards to the pin. The one thing I didn't want to do was hit an absolutely terrible shot that would lead to a double bogey or something. True, I had a big lead, but I wanted to close things out in style. I chose an 8-iron. I made a couple of practice swings, just to feel where the ground was in relation to the club head. I could tell the turf was very firm, and felt I'd be able to deliver the ball my normal 8-iron distance. Then I got over the ball, swung, and hoped for the best. I saw the ball take off, but then lost it in the darkness, about 30 yards into its flight. The next thing I heard was a huge roar from the gallery up by the green. My ball had come to rest 2 feet from the hole, and the birdie gave me the kind of victory I was looking for. Looking back, I suppose I could have used a pitching wedge and played the ball just short of the green to avoid the bunkers and any real trouble. But whenever I get an iron in my hands, my first instinct is to be aggressive. The irons are the true offensive weapons in golf. I always feel a surge of excitement just pulling an iron from the bag, because that's where the process of making birdies really begins. If you're capable of hitting the ball close to the hole, you're capable of shooting low scores. The basic equation. From a scientific standpoint, golf is a game of opposites. I think that's what makes it such a hard game for some people. A lot of things that occur when the club strikes the ball are just the opposite of what your instincts tell you should happen. For instance, a shot that slices to the right occurs because the club head, square to the target line, is traveling to the left at impact. Another example is grip pressure. If you grip the club tightly in an effort to hit the ball harder, you end up swinging the club even slower, because tight muscles don't move as fast as loose muscles. The best example falls in the area of iron play. In order to get the ball airborne, you must hit down on it. Countless golfers try to help get the ball in the air by swinging up on the ball. That makes it go down, a top shot, or a thin one at best. Hitting down not only gets the ball in the air, it imparts backspin and enables the ball to fly true. A primer on ball position. The golf club travels in a circular path during the swing, with the lowest point of the circle occurring directly below your sternum. To make the club head contact the ball while it's still moving downward, before it reaches the bottom of the circle, you need to position the ball correctly in relation to your body. When using a driver, I place the ball opposite my left heel. The club head will be moving, level to slightly upward, when it contacts the ball. The driver is the only club you want to hit slightly on the upswing. When using a 5-iron, I position the ball slightly forward of center at address. Nevertheless, I still can hit down on the ball because my body moves forward laterally on the downswing, which moves the bottom point of the swing closer to the target. Finally, when using the pitching wedge, I want to hit down a bit more sharply on the ball with my wedges. Therefore, I play the ball dead in the center of my stance. I have less lateral body movement on my short irons because the swing is shorter, so I don't want to position the ball forward of center. Building a stable base. On every shot, you need a combination of balance, stability, and ease of movement. Those factors are largely determined by stance width, how far apart you position your feet at address. Stance width is especially important with your irons, as they are precision clubs that demand a rock-solid base with your lower body. When I use a driver and woods from the fairway, my feet are spread wide to accommodate my big shoulder turn and fast upper body movement during the swing. When I use a 5-iron, my stance width becomes narrower. My stance is wide enough to allow me to keep my balance, but not so far apart that it restricts motion in my upper body. And when I attempt short shots, my swing with the short irons isn't super long, and I rarely swing with all my effort. Therefore, I don't need a wide base. When I'm pitching or chipping, my stance is narrower still. Keep your chin up. Good posture is important on every shot. At address, I make sure my back is fairly straight and that I have a bit of flex in my knees. My body is now prepared to move freely in any direction during the swing. One of the most important aspects of good posture is to hold your chin high at address. It's something Butch Harmon and I check constantly. You want your chin well off your chest, so your left shoulder has room to turn under your chin on the backswing. This is one of my key thoughts. I used to stand too close to the ball, which caused me to lower my chin just to see the ball clearly when I looked down at address. I sometimes felt crowded, and no wonder. There was very little room for my shoulders to turn and my arms to swing. Today I stand further from the ball, with my head held high throughout the swing. My change in posture allows me to turn freely, back and through. Think wide on the backswing. The proper backswing is a combination of horizontal and vertical movement. Most amateurs err on the vertical side. They start the swing by lifting the arms straight up and cocking the wrists immediately. Because the backswing is too vertical, the downswing is too vertical as well. The tendency is to chop down on the ball instead of swinging through it smoothly. Don't forget the horizontal part of the backswing. That means establishing a nice, wide swing arc as soon as you move the club back. I have the feeling of stretching my hands and arms away from my body early in the backswing, my wrists beginning to cock naturally after the club head reaches about knee height. That helps me accumulate power and also ensures that my downswing won't be too steep. If the takeaway is too steep and vertical, that will mean deep divots, fat shots, and an inconsistent ball flight. Unify your backswing. I believe in a nice, wide backswing, but I don't like a backswing that is too loose. I don't want my arms running away from my upper body. That would lead to a fake backswing, the club reaching parallel, but only due to excessive wrist cocking or the arms swinging back too far. That leads to a weak downswing in which you slap at the ball with your hands and arms alone. I try to swing the club back with everything, hips, shoulders, arms, and hands working together. When I turn my shoulders fully, they accommodate the swinging of my arms to create a strong, unified package at the top of the backswing. One way to prevent your arms from outracing your upper body is to check the position of your right arm at various stages of the backswing. When Butch and I work together, he checks that my right arm is kept fairly close to my side and in front of my torso as I complete my shoulder turn. I don't like my arms to feel cramped, but I don't want them straying too far from my body either. Start down slow. When good players talk about getting too quick, they're almost always talking about the first move down from the top of the backswing. The beginning of the downswing can't be rushed. You want your swing to gather speed gradually, so that everything works in sequence and the club head reaches its maximum speed at impact. If you start down suddenly, all your speed and power are gone by the time you reach impact. Your timing and mechanics are shot too. Remember, there can only be one fast moment in the swing, and it better be when the club strikes the ball. Down and through. One of the keys to good ball striking is to hit through the ball, not at it. In my mind, the ball is merely an object that is in the way of the club head as it tears through the hitting area. I don't try to end my swing abruptly after the ball is struck. I try to keep the club head accelerating down the target line as long as I comfortably can. Let's take a break for a minute, and I'll tell you about a very acceptable miss. My swing tendencies change a bit from day to day. That's part of golf. For no discernible reason, your misses might one day be pulls to the left. The next day fades a bit too far to the right. These small shifts in ball flight aren't necessarily disastrous, provided you allow for them. I learned this lesson at the 1997 Mercedes Championship, where I found myself tied with Tom Lehman after 54 holes. Heavy rain canceled the last round just after play got underway, so it all came down to a sudden-death playoff between Tom and me. The playoff began at the 186-yard par 3 seventh hole, in a light rain. It was also cold. Tom drew the honor, and darned if he didn't hit his ball in the water to the left of the green. Knowing I needed only a par to win, I didn't want to flirt with the left side of the green, where the pin was located dangerously close to the water Tom had just visited. I aimed well to the right, taking a key factor into consideration. My misses on the range during my warm-up tended to be to the left. The way I figured it, if I hit the ball exactly where I was aiming, I could take two putts and still win. If I happened to hook the ball a bit, so much the better. I hit a 6-iron, and sure enough, the ball drew to the left more than I anticipated. I was sure glad I aimed well to the right, because the ball landed 8 inches from the hole and stopped dead. I tapped in for birdie and came away with a trophy and a lesson in course management I carry with me to this day. A tale of two divots. The mark of a good iron player is the ability to control spin, trajectory, and distance. I never had full control of those factors until the year following my victory in the 1997 Masters. Only after a long period of hard work was I able to get my iron play where I wanted it. One of the swing changes I made altered the look of my divots, especially with my short and middle irons. Prior to 1997, I took deep, heavy divots that sometimes were as big as dinner plates. The divots may have looked cool flying through the air, but they showed my downswing was too steep and that I was de-lofting the club face through impact. As a result, I couldn't adjust the ball's spin, trajectory, or distance worth a darn. The swing change I made shallowed out my swing so the club head approached the ball at an angle that was closer to level. The divots I took after the swing change looked a lot different. Instead of being long and deep, they were long and shallow, about the size of a dollar bill. I can still take a big divot when I have to, but the standard divot should be long and thin. There are other reasons why divots can be deep and irregular. It may be that your ball is positioned too far back in your stance, which necessitates a steep angle of approach with the club head. You may be throwing the club head at the ball with your arms and hands alone, instead of assisting with your shoulders, in which case the gash made by your divot points well to the left of your target line. A sweet finish. Now I'd like you to take a look at the photo in the booklet of my follow-through under this heading. The look of my follow-through serves as sort of a roadmap for what happened earlier in my swing. See how my arms are extended? That shows my swing was real wide, with good extension through the ball. See how far my shoulders have unwound? That shows my swing was predicated on a full shoulder turn instead of using just my hands and arms. Finally, see how the toe of the club points straight down? That proves I didn't rotate the club excessively with my hands through impact. For it to arrive at this position, I had to release the club naturally. Now might be a good time to stop the tape and practice your follow-through. The art of teeing the ball. When playing a par 3 hole, the first rule is to always use a tee. As my hero Jack Nicklaus once said, I found out a long time ago that air offers less resistance than dirt. Using a tee goes a long way to guaranteeing solid contact. How high you tee the ball depends on the club you're hitting and how much spin you want to put on the ball. With long irons, I tee the ball about half an inch high. That's pretty far off the ground. But because I'm sweeping the ball off the tee, there's little chance I'll catch the ball too high on the club face. My thought as I sweep through the ball is to clip the tops of the grass, leaving the tee in the ground. With the more lofted clubs, like the 7-9 irons, I tee the ball much lower, barely above the turf. My swing naturally gets more upright as the loft of the club increases, so I'm hitting down on the ball more. I think, then I swing. Most of the amateurs I play with adopt one of two strategies for their approach shots. They either aim for the green in general, hoping they'll wind up with a putt for birdie. That strategy is much too broad. Or they aim for the flagstick every time, without giving much thought to the consequences of an errant shot. That strategy is too one-dimensional. I always aim for a specific part of the green, which may or may not be right next to the hole. I take into consideration the kind of putt I'll face from various spots on the green and respect the trouble that will result if the shot doesn't come off as planned. This strategy has served me well throughout my career, especially on courses such as Augusta National, where the tricky greens often dictate that I play to a spot 20 feet or more from the hole. The point is, don't just grab a club and let it rip. Good iron play is as much about course management and smart strategy as it is about executing the swing. Think before you leap, and you won't make big numbers. How I hit the 2-iron stinger. In 1998, Butch Harmon and I began working on a specialty shot with my 2-iron. I call it my stinger, because it bores through the wind beautifully and rolls up to 80 yards. I tee the ball low and play it back in my stance, with my hands set well ahead. I also flex my knees more than usual. I turn my shoulders fully going back, maintaining that flex in my knees. I start the downswing deliberately, keeping my hands and arms in front of my chest. I hit down firmly. However, I make sure my downswing isn't too steep. I accelerate through the ball, but maintain my balance. For accuracy's sake, I extend the club head straight down the target line after impact. My follow-through is a bit shorter than with the other clubs. Give it a try if you got your 2-iron in your hand. Equipped for success. I doubt your set of irons looks anything like mine. That's probably a good thing. I play thin-bladed forged irons, which aren't forgiving at all. I love them. They provide wonderful feedback and feel. But they wouldn't do much for the average golfer. Most amateurs would be better served by some kind of sole-heavy, cavity-back design, which delivers good results on off-center hits and helps you get the ball in the air. You'll notice I carry the 2 and 3 irons. Unless you're a 4-handicap player or less who generates a lot of clubhead speed, the long irons aren't such a hot idea either. They're too demanding, and you wouldn't use them more than once or twice a round anyway. I suggest you give some lofted utility woods, a 5 and 7 wood, a try. They're much more versatile and will save you a lot of strokes. One thing we should have in common is more than one sand wedge. A single sand wedge just doesn't cut it anymore. Add a lob wedge, something with about 60 degrees of loft, and you'll save par more often. Finishing thoughts. One of the secrets to good iron play is to keep things simple. The number of situations I encounter may be endless, but the same sound, no-frills swing is sufficient to deal with almost all of them. Let's review my fundamental keys to hitting the irons solidly and consistently. The longer the iron, the farther forward I position the ball in my stance. Additionally, I sweep the longer irons, hit down on the rest. I trust the club's loft to get the ball airborne. My backswing with the irons is shorter than with the woods. To promote good timing, I start down slowly from the top of the backswing. Remember, the club head strikes the ball first, the turf last. I don't begin to take a divot until the ball has left the club face. I swing within myself. On standard shots, I never expend more than 80% of my effort. The worse my lie, the further back I position my ball in my stance. I always tee my ball on par threes. You want every edge you can get. And finally, the perfect divot is about the same size and shape as a dollar bill. How to nail fairway woods. Playing the versatile clubs. Whereas a lot of golfers use the 3-wood almost exclusively from the fairway, I tend to use mine mainly from the tee, because distance isn't a problem for me. I often go with the 3-wood instead of the driver just to keep the ball in play. But sometimes, when I'm playing a monster par 5 that is almost unreachable in 2, I'll go for the green with my 3-wood, hoping to attain as much distance as possible while exerting some degree of control and precision. The best example of this shot is the 3-wood I played on the 18th hole at Pebble Beach in the final round of the 1998 AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am. Coming to the last hole, I was trailing my good friend and neighbor Mark O'Meara by 2 strokes. Mark was playing just behind me, and I knew I probably needed an eagle to have a chance. A good drive left me with 267 yards to the front of the green, just inside the first cut of rough. Fortunately for me, the PGA Tour had applied the lift, clean, and place rule due to the heavy rains earlier in the week, so I placed my ball in a perfect cupcake lie, just into the first cut of rough. I was licking my chops just waiting to get at it. The shot itself wasn't so easy. It was cold, and the wind was blowing into my face and slightly from right to left toward the water that guards the left side of the fairway in green. Now, when the wind is blowing from the right, I usually elect to fade the ball, so it's curving into the wind. But to reach the green, I had to play a powerful draw. I aimed at the edge of the grandstand to the right of the green, got set, then swung as hard as I possibly could. I smoked it. The shot came off just as I saw it in my mind's eye, drawing beautifully and reaching the front of the green. I didn't make the putt for eagle, and the tap-in birdie wasn't enough to catch Mark, but that shot affirmed what I knew deep inside, that I could attempt a difficult shot under pressure with everything on the line and actually pull it off. Address, act naturally. The fairway wood swing is what I call a tweener. It isn't as long or as fierce as my driver swing, yet it is considerably longer than a typical iron shot. My position at address sets the stage for the mid-range degree of motion. So take a minute to check out the picture of my address under the heading Act Naturally. Here are some key points. I set my right shoulder lower than my left and angle my right knee toward the target. My stance is fairly wide, but not as wide as for my driver. I also hold my chin high. I really concentrate on being relaxed. Solid contact is very important, and you can't hit the ball squarely if there's tension in your hands, arms, and legs. Finally, I play the ball about 3 inches inside my left heel, which still puts it forward of center. Take a moment and think about each of these elements as you prepare your address. Think each of them through so they stay in your mind. Sweep back to sweep through. I like to sweep the ball cleanly off the turf with the club head moving absolutely level with the ground at the moment of impact. I don't like to pinch the ball off the turf, and I sure as heck don't want to hit up on the ball as I do with my driver. To encourage this level angle of approach, I take the club head away from the ball in the same manner I want it to swing through on the downswing. Low to the ground with a nice wide arc. This not only promotes the right swing path and angle of approach, it establishes good tempo and smooth rhythm. Let's take a break for another quick story. A big shot on demand. No doubt about it, many of my best performances have come at crucial times in big tournaments. I've played well in the clutch often enough to give the impression that I can play my best golf simply by willing myself to do so. I only wish that were the case. Unfortunately, there are times when my touch isn't sharp, my swing isn't where I like it, or the putts just don't seem to fall. At those moments, no amount of concentration, positive thinking, or inspiration can make me play my best. I guess it's part of the normal cycle of peaks and valleys that every athlete experiences. The trick, as every golfer knows, is being able to score well when my game isn't firing on all cylinders. A case in point is a 1999 PGA Championship in Mindanao Country Club near Chicago. Despite having a 5-stroke lead at one point in the final round, I wasn't at all comfortable with my full swing. For some reason, I couldn't draw the ball well at all. My fade was working beautifully, and I had full control over trajectory, but my intentional draws were either staying out to the right or hooking too much. A series of loose shots and unsuccessful recoveries allowed Sergio Garcia to cut my lead to 1 as I came to the last hole, a tough par 4 that demanded a right-to-left ball flight. Mentally, the sparks were really flying. Should I gamble on a risky draw, which, if successful, would leave a relatively short approach? Or should I go with a dependable fade I knew I could hit in the fairway, but leave a much longer shot to the green? I thought about it for a long time, then elected to go with the draw. The hole design asked for it, and I was just angry and determined enough to say, the heck with it, and take my chances. I teed my ball and committed myself to the right-to-left ball flight. I took a deep breath, relaxed, and muttered to myself, let's aim for the inside of the ball and turn this bad boy over. I made a full turn and swung aggressively, aiming for the inside quadrant of the ball and keeping my head well to the right so I would release the club properly. I've hit better tee shots, but I can't remember when. I just smoked it, the ball hooking about 5 yards and stopping in a perfect spot smack in the middle of the fairway. From there, I hit a pitching wedge, hole high to the right of the flag, and two-putted for the win. I didn't feel ecstatic, so much as relieved. That was pretty harrowing stuff. Nothing in golf is harder than playing a shot you haven't practiced, or one you otherwise feel you aren't capable of. One of the TV commentators later pointed out that it